politics has never been stranger or more online, which is why the politics team at Wired is making a new show, Wired Politics Lab. It's all about how to navigate the endless stream of news and information and what to look out for. Each week on the show, we'll dig into far-right platforms, AI chatbots, influencer campaigns, and so much more. Wired Politics Lab launches Thursday, April 11th. Follow the show wherever you get your podcasts.
Adam.
Oh, I'm sorry. You weren't finished.
Bo.
Adam.
Bubba.
Adam. Listen. This would be... That's my line.
Oh.
No. Hey. So you can't ask Travis. You can't say Travis. I get to say Travis. That's what I get to say.
Well, then, by all means.
You sound very kingly.
Say something kingly, Travis.
Wine and cheese for all of my men.
Why wine and cheese? Why are your men drinking? They sound soft, your men.
How about mead and boar for all of my men?
Oh, even better.
Yes. So try that one, Travis.
That sounds better to me. I think Adam's got the right feel. This has to be a little more masculine. Is mead masculine, though?
Mead is pretty manly, I have to say. It's like a Viking drink. It's something you drink out of a horn, which, just by definition, makes it pretty manly.
All right, go for it.
Or hornly.
Mead and boar for all my men.
Yes, your majesty.
And scene. Okay, so what was your horrible experience of the week?
I think I might have found one scorpion running around, but I smushed it so badly that I couldn't tell if it was a scorpion by the time that I saw what was left of it. But it was certainly spinning around and looked a little bit like a lobster.
What was it doing? Was it doing anything? Was it like was throwing you gang signs and trying to get you to fight?
Said, howdy, boy.
Oh, so your scorpion was a cowboy.
We're in Arizona, my man.
Okay. Cowboy scorpion sounds...
Yeehaw.
Yeah, sounds really kind of annoying, terrifying. And someone else was just telling me that if you get stung by a scorpion, it is the most painful thing you can imagine.
That's what they say. And other people go, it's like being stung by a hornet, which to me is one of the more painful things I can imagine.
Yeah, I don't know. My horrible thing was, look at this, look.
Oh, a boo-boo on your thumb.
I had my hand resting against the front loader of my tractor as I loaded wood into it, logs. And so that's where my thumb was when the log, traveling at the speed of, let's get this done fast, banged into it from about 2 feet away.
That's what happens when you try to be Farmer McRae. So now that we've shared some horror stories, anything else that might be cyber-related of horror that happened this week?
100%. You shared something hilarious either today or it was yesterday. If you're a regular listener to this show, you know that one of Adam's only ways of knowing what's going on with Heather, his very wonderful wife, is through her Instagram account. He'll look at and see what she's doing. She'll post a lot of stories.
Well, it's a shortcut. There's nothing worse than saying, how was your day? And having a, so therefore I figure.
Your credo has always been, don't overshare, right?
Oh, don't overshare, except with your spouse, maybe.
Oh, well, that's a different thing. And that's for a different kind of podcast. But I meant... Yeah. Don't overshare on social media, which, you don't do at all. I think the only thing you've ever posted is the, that bottle of water in the footwell of your car. How come you don't put up a picture of the chicken suit? And come to think of it, how come you never did the chicken dance on the show as promised?
Scratch that. Scratch that, guys. Adam is going to do a dance for you on TikTok.
I will totally do my chicken dance on TikTok. I will totally do my chicken dance on TikTok. Yes, I do believe. My son was waiting for the arrival of his chicken suit so he could do a father-son chicken dance.
Oh, blame it on the person who's not even 10 years old.
I think Elon Musk could probably learn a thing or two about stretching things out and coming up with new reasons.
Oh, yeah. He's been in the news quite a bit.
Yep.
It was nice when Twitter was like, so that data you wanted, here it is. Want to buy the company?
Oops.
Regardless, yes, I do think we had a standing commitment to a chicken dance.
We did.
Now, what you sent me that I thought was hilarious was someone targeted you for an ad that allowed you to spy on someone's Instagram account, which I know you would never do in a million years, but it was like basically like, not that we think that if your partner is cheating on you or is not acting the way that you suspect something's wrong, the first thing you should do is talk to him. The second thing you should do is listen. The third thing you should do is like really try and get to a good warm place with them. But if you can't, we sell an app that'll let you spy on them.
Yeah, I would say there's
really alarming.
There's a greater chance of universal world peace than me spying on my spouse.
Well, you know what they say, and I have a little experience in this, having shoulder surfed on somebody I shouldn't have. You get what you deserve when you snoop.
That's right. Oftentimes you find what you don't want to find. So if you don't want to find something, don't even be looking.
Yeah, don't look. Just don't look. That was how I found out that, yeah, I was... years ago, I went to the doctor because I was having some man problems, and I was too young to be having these man problems. I was in my 20s. And so I went to the doctor, and he said, well, if I had to bet, I'd say you have beep, this thing, which is, which is a disaster by any standard. Especially since my reply was, but doctor, I'm in a monogamous relationship. There's a very pregnant pause. And he said, no, you're not. And that's how I found out. This was long before there were apps. And obviously, anyway, you could spy on your spouse. But, you know, if you're going to use these spyware things, first of all, we think you're... a lout and a cur and a bad person. Secondly, you just have the conversation because you're not going to like what you find out. Am I right?
Well, I certainly think if you use one of those apps, which you shouldn't, you just might find yourself at the wrong end of a lawsuit, which you
well,
don't
how
want.
Do you even? Yeah, but how do you even explain? Like, I saw you went on a date with, like, how do you start that conversation? You know something that is like, you know, emotional dynamite. I don't understand, like, I don't even understand the concept. It's like, you can't use it in court in a divorce. It's not admissible.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. There was some Elon Musk news for real this week, was there not?
There's always Elon Musk news every week.
Yeah, apparently there was a video campaign going around in India with a deep fake of Elon Musk, yet again, promising free cryptocurrency.
Well, but Adam...
Wait, that's fake?
That was
oh,
fake.
Oh, man.
Yep.
Oh, no again. Wonder I've been waiting for my cryptocurrency for like 3 months now.
I guess I know what we're going to be doing for the next few days, Travis.
Yep.
But, you know, Elon Musk, the reason it's... easy to make a deep fake of Elon Musk is the same reason it was easy to make that deep fake of Obama that came out many years ago, which is there's a lot of tape.
Mm-hmm.
I think people are kind of hip to the fact that that exists. So if someone were to try to do that during the election cycle, for example, with someone campaigning, it probably wouldn't work. But what I worry about is like there's news, you know, recent news from the January 6th hearings or whatever that's called. And
January 6th hearings.
I could see somebody saying that the tape of Bill Barr saying that, you know, he told Trump that his fears were unfounded. That was all doctored tape and not real. That's the problem. It's like the truth and reality have become rubberized.
Well, and that's led to the whole fake news situation that you're talking about. It's led to the whole AI thing. And today it's kind of like, well, wait. Is that real? Is that fake news? And never forget, that hackers are creative, sophisticated, and persistent. Anytime there's anything new in the world of cyber, it's going to show up somehow in some communication from a hacker or a scammer.
Right. Or like even a state-sponsored hacker trying to destabilize an election, or...
It's limitless because the evolution of technology is limitless. As you like to say, Uncle Bo, that the technology that makes us powerful also makes us vulnerable.
That's you. You like to say that.
We both like to say it. Travis likes to say it too. He often says that.
All the time.
I'm Mr. Bo, by the way.
Oh, excuse me, Mr. Bo.
You know, before we get into the show, Travis, did you get the those new microphones that I sent to you?
Microphones?
Well, Adam called me up and said Travis desperately needs these new microphones. Wait a minute.
I don't remember calling you at all. It might have been me when I took my Ambien, but I don't seem to remember it being me. Why would I do that? Wasn't me.
Wait a second. I can look at my phone right now. Hold on. Yeah. All right. It's right here. It was at 12:26 last Tuesday.
Yeah.
It's clearly a phone call from you. Oh, my God.
Ooh.
All right, guys. Time to come clean. I actually did put together an AI bot based on previous recordings from Adam, just because we have so many of them.
You bastard. Ugh.
Yeah.
Scandal.
And I didn't get the microphone, but I did send it to my friend Jake. So he thanks you.
It's the least we could do for Jake.
Okay, come double clean. You didn't do any of that, but that's the way it would work.
Exactly. Yep.
Well, there's a, you know, the iconic story of this was it happened in Europe that the CEO of a portfolio company got a call from the CEO of the parent company saying they had a new cooperative advertising program going. Every company was contributing, all the portfolio companies. Could he please send $200,000?
Mm-hmm.
And because the wow. CEO of the portfolio company absolutely knew the voice of the parent company's CEO.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah.
Yep.
He wired the money.
And yeah, because it was the dude. It was the guy.
It was the guy, except it wasn't the guy. And the money was gone, and then that guy was gone.
Well, the thing that's especially sneaky about that one, too, is it would take a lot of guts to be able to get a call from your boss telling you to do something and saying, I don't believe this is you.
It's true, which is why I sent the mics to you.
Right.
No, I didn't, but they weren't there. But anyway.
Well, I don't know if you guys were watching the Obi-Wan show.
I started to. It's very good.
Yeah, I'm enjoying it. I'm a bit of a Star Wars nerd. But one thing that I was really happy to see was when they brought Darth Vader, they had James Earl Jones' voice.
Impossible.
Right. Unfortunately, it ended up that was a deepfake. That was something that was put together from previous clips.
Oh, really? James Earl Jones didn't come in the studio and do it?
Apparently not. They got his voice with his permission and sort of put that together from, you know, previous samplings of his
work. It was a licensing deal, basically.
Yeah, exactly. But also slightly disappointing just because I was sort of giddy to hear the Darth Vader voice.
And I just want you to know, for all those people out there that are listening, I'm happy to lend you my voice. Licensing it. You know what I mean? You know.
And if they don't want to use James Earl Jones, hit me up.
That's right. If you don't want James Earl Jones, Travis is your guy.
That's the sound of a man dying and with machine assisted, almost not dying, you know. It's a very strange thing, Darth Vader.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, you know, you get dumped down a volcano or whatever happened to him, tossed in lava, you're not really going to be, that well afterwards.
I'd retire personally. I'd be like, I don't want to do this anymore. But he
kept going.
A
lot of people thought Anakin was pretty hot.
Oh.
Welcome to What the Hack, a show about hackers, scammers, and the people they go after. I'm Adam Obi-2 Kenobi.
I'm Bo Cyber Jedi.
And I'm Travis, straight up Lando Calrissian.
And today we're talking with bon vivant, man about town, dashing rascal, award-winning BBC and HBO journalist Andrew Gold about how scammers aren't the only people to scam people.
This spring, get out there, enjoy the weather, and recapture the magic of riding a bike with Electric E-Bike.
With an amazing variety of models built for riders of all abilities, it's never been easier to fall in love with riding again. Plus, every Electric E-Bike ships free and only requires quick, toolless assembly.
This is my first ever e-bike, and the experience has just been great. I was a little bit intimidated at first because I hadn't gone biking in a while, but the 500-watt motor that the Electric E-Bike comes with really gives you a nice little boost, especially if you're trying to go uphill or pick up some speed.
Data shows that e-bike riders take their bike out more often. That means you get more exercise, more exploration, and wait for it, fresh air.
And riding an e-bike isn't like, it's not cheating. It's just making it possible for you to be out there longer on each ride. And speaking of things going a little slower, you can finance Electric E-Bike for as little as $49 a month.
Get into spring with Electric E-Bikes, the number one selling e-bikes in the nation. Get your adventure started at electricebikes.com. And please mention that What the Heck with Adam Levin sent you in the post-checkout survey.
That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com. I just got back from France, and there was a lot of stuff I couldn't stream because I was in the wrong region. But using NordVPN, I was able to stream everything.
I use NordVPN too, but it's more to protect my private data, like bank details, passwords, and online identity. There are a million trackers online that are just sort of watching you. And NordVPN is a great way to get around those.
NordVPN can switch your virtual location, allowing you to save money by purchasing flights, hotels, subscriptions from other countries at a cheaper price.
If you're traveling and you're using public Wi-Fi, NordVPN can protect you wherever you are.
It's not just that. NordVPN also comes with threat protection, which helps protect you from viruses, malware, and phishing sites.
NordVPN is the fastest VPN in the world, and it'll only set you back the price of a cup of coffee a month.
To get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/WTHack.
And hey, there's no risk. It's a 30-day money-back guarantee.
Check the link in the podcast description.
Andrew, I realized getting ready for the show today that actually you and I share rock stars in common. Andrew Gold, and Bo would back me up with this, and I'm sure you know, was a very famous musician, songwriter, unfortunately passed away in 2011. So you live with the ghost of Andrew Gold, and I live with the reality of Adam Levine, who completely messed up my chi on Google.
So did Adam Levin, the guitar teacher, and Adam Levin, the
author. And
how many literally?
Let's not forget
guys,
the publisher of High Times.
Yeah, and also Andrew Gold and Adam Levin. How dare you? You know, you both have names where there are literally, you're like chrysanthemums. You're everywhere in the fall.
But we are everywhere, Bo.
Oh my gosh, Adam the Fall. I'm sorry that you see what I did there.
Andrew Gold. Yeah, he was. He played with the Beatles quite a bit, and he did. Do you ever watch that sitcom Mad About You?
Yes.
No.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he did this. He did the song for that, I think, and he did the one for the Golden Girls as well. Thank you for
being a friend. Oh, that I do know.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to say that I know the songs, obviously, because of my name. I wouldn't have known him otherwise, I don't think. But I ended up speaking to his wife. You know, it's not his late wife because he died, unfortunately. But I spoke to her on Twitter because we got talking, and she kept seeing sort of Andrew Gold popping up, and it wasn't him, of course. It's quite sad. And she still uses his old account on Twitter. She signs in and sort of checks if anyone's saying things to Andrew and sort of replies to people on his behalf. And it's all quite sad, but very lovely as well. And we had a chat because it was like, a name is, it's sort of means nothing and it means everything, if you know what I mean. It's like you go through life as he's the only other person in the world I've ever known of who's had the same name as me, which is quite something. But of course, it's just a name as well. So there was some sort of bond we created.
Andrew, I have learned many, many fascinating things about you, but one of my favorite little Andrew Gold tidbits is you represented England in beer pong.
Yeah.
I need to know this.
Wait, there's a represent. They are represented? How?
They are represented. I called it beer pong because I don't know how to call the game when there's no beer actually involved. I suppose it's just pong, but then that sounds like a bad smell or like the old game in the 80s, the arcade game. So I was living in Argentina. I spent 7 or 8 years out there. That's where I did a lot of my documentary work, exposing exorcists and things like that. And because I did that kind of stuff, and when you're out in Argentina, and I think a lot of people will have this experience if they've lived in sort of far-flung places and you are the British or American representative, or, you know, over there, you start getting called for different kinds of things, you know. So I suddenly got a call saying, look, we're looking for somebody, we're doing a World Cup, like the soccer football, you know, World Cup. They were copying the teams that were playing each other in the World Cup on some sports channel on Argentine TV or Argentinian TV. And it was games of like this pong ball thing from across the table. And so England's soccer group was with like Panama, and I can't remember who else, but let's say it's Sweden and Paraguay or whatever it was. So I had to go into the studio. They like sent some, you know, expensive car to come and pick me up and take me in. And they gave me like this England shirt and everything. And I was on the other side playing against someone from Panama, because that's who the England football team were going to play against. But this Panamanian person was an 11 or 12 year old girl that they had found somewhere in Argentina. So it was one of these sort of lose-lose situations, because it's like, well, if I win, that's not great. Like, nobody wants me to win. And if I lose, I've lost to an 11 year old girl. And I just thought, you know what, I'm not going to overthink it. I'm just going to try and sort of get the ball in the cup. And I lost. She just absolutely wiped the floor with me, this girl. Mm. And it was all very embarrassing, and everyone laughed. And Argentinian TV, there is a lot of like, I suppose it's, I don't mean this in a snobby way, but it's a little bit sort of lowbrow. There's a lot of like shouting and cheering in the background going on. So I was really having my face rubbed in this kind of thing. And then they wouldn't even let me keep the England jersey that they'd given me. They were just like, okay, we need that back now. Yeah. So I didn't even get that.
Oh, that's a really sad story. I mean, getting trounced by an 11-year-old girl at Pong.
Tell me.
And for our listeners in the United States, Pong, we don't have that word here. Did you know that, Andrew?
Well, as in the smell.
Yeah, it's like you know, we say sidewalk, you say pavement, all that sort of thing. Pong is another one of those words where we just say body, BO, or stench, or
yeah,
they just use my name. And then you have Pong. Did you guys know the word Pong?
Bo went to university in England, so he kind of, you know, stretches the two.
I did not. Well, anyway, so I have like the only vestige of having lived in England is the way that I say extraordinary, and my kids like rake me over the coals when I do it. I don't know how I used to do it. I've stopped, but I used to have a slightly mid-Atlantic accent.
Extraordinary. Yeah, I love that mid-Atlantic accent. It just doesn't exist anymore, does it? And it's so great to hear it, that sort of classic filmic 1930s. Well, I'll tell you a thing about, you know, they speak really fast, and I wish it existed.
I got to ask you one other thing, too, especially now since the United States Senate is even taking this up now, and that is, you hunted UFOs. That's pretty cool.
Mm. Yeah, well, I mean, hunted in the pursued kind of sense, but I say hunted because it sounds, you know, it sounds like I've gone out with a bow and arrow or
dramatic,
something after these UFOs. That was just another thing. So I was doing these things, obviously, in Argentina. A lot of the things I do, a lot of the documentaries I do are around belief, extreme belief, sometimes to expose those kinds of things or sometimes just to sort of marvel at them. And the UFO case was one of those where it didn't feel like anything bad was coming from this kind of belief. It felt like a kind of delusion that was fine. I've just done an interview for my podcast with Stuart Vise, who's a philosopher who wrote The Uses of Delusion, all about how delusions can be good for you, which is great. Most of my episodes, the podcasts, are about how delusions are bad and we should stay away from magical thinking and stuff, but they can be good. And the UFO stuff, I went out to a village called Capilla del Monte, or with an Argentine accent, it's Capilla del Monte, out in the countryside of Argentina. And that village is known as like this alien place because in the 1980s, some sort of alien apparently landed there. So this is not like the recent news of the unidentified aerial phenomena that the American Navy have been talking about, which could be very real. This is more like, you know, little green men that have that people think have come along. And what really probably happened was there was a fire in a forest, and they can't explain what had happened because the fire went out. They're like, oh, there's a dark patch on the hill. There were aliens here, and now it's become the go-to alien place. It's very like new age touristy and all that kind of thing in Argentina. So I went there. I met some of the guys who were like the most zealous about their alien belief. And we went, you know, trekking up into the mountains at like 4 in the morning to look for aliens. And they did some sort of meditation and stuff. And it was all very hippie and new age, which I don't really, you know, go for, but it was a lot of fun and beautiful views like I've never seen. I mean, often these places where there's a lot of UFO belief are in extremely beautiful countryside places. And they were sort of saying like, can you see those lights? Those are third dimensional or fifth dimensional beings who live underground and come out at night. And I was like, but they look like car headlights, really. And they were like, well, they might be car headlights. So that was that. But it was fun.
Belief is like kind of the linchpin of a lot of scams. You know, if you believe that you're going to get a certain outcome, it makes you a lot more susceptible to getting scammed. And
yeah,
going and hunting for certain stories or you know, the truth behind a belief, or it also puts you in the position sort of the scammer sometimes. I mean, you have to think like the person trying to get someone to believe. It's a game of make-believe where you're making them believe something. Is that right? Or
oh yeah, and also there's, and I think some people who have fallen for things, they don't want to admit it sometimes, and that's no good because they should admit it so we all learn about the scam. And they don't want to admit it because they feel like it will show that they were stupid, you know. And there's so much evidence to suggest that it doesn't prove that you're stupid. And there's a great book, another guy I had on my podcast called David Robson, he wrote a book called The Intelligence Trap, and it was all about how often it's the smartest people who fall for things the easiest. And a great example was the Sherlock Holmes writer Arthur Conan Doyle, who was supposed to be outrageously intelligent and the master of deduction and critical thinking, obviously, to create a character like Sherlock. And he's known for having had a very strong belief in fairies because of a prank that some teenage girls pulled, where they put up pictures of these fake fairies that they pinned to a board. And because the pins went through their stomachs of the photos or whatever, these things, Arthur Conan Doyle believed that that was evidence that they had belly buttons and that fairies could give birth and they were born. And that actually it caused his fallout with Houdini, who was obviously a skeptic as a magician, and he was very, very skeptical. They fell out over that and Arthur Conan Doyle's belief in Ouija boards as well. And he tried to convince Houdini that Houdini's mother was trying to contact him from beyond the grave. And it led to this great falling out. But obviously Arthur Conan Doyle was a supremely intelligent or was an interesting person. So anybody can fall for stuff, particularly intelligent people, a lot of the time. I think it's a really interesting point you're making as well. If we look in terms of looking at what we all do in common, if you guys are exposing scams and belief and looking, you know, that kind of thing, and what I do as well. I mean, because I went out into Buenos Aires again, and it was an exorcist who was basically giving people bits of olive oil and saying that's going to cure your cancer, and you don't need to go to a shrink when you've got schizophrenia. Just come here, and I'll get the demon out of you. And it was just, to an extent, I had to scam the exorcist so that he would allow me to continue filming him for a couple of months. And I did it in a way that I'm maybe not proud of now, but I was a bit cheekier when I was younger. So I was being a bit mischievous, and I would ask questions that I knew would make him look ridiculous, but as if I were being sincere. So I was asking, oh, so are there vampires here a lot of the time? And he was like, oh, yeah, a lot of vampires. And levitation and stuff. And he's like, oh, yeah, we've seen people lift up onto the roof. So I had to be a little bit insincere myself, and also try to get, as you say, into his mind. It's a whole complex thing.
In the case of that guy, was he a scammer himself, or did he actually believe his own stories?
Yeah, that is the golden question. And I stayed up for like weeks, months, years trying to know about that. And I guess the disappointing answer is I'll never know. Mm-hmm. And I don't think these people, I think the closest thing to knowing is that I think these people, deep down, they know they're scamming people, and they don't really want to admit it to themselves. Maybe they just keep going with, you know, it's theater, and they convince themselves. I know somebody, a friend of the family friend, who believes that she can talk to ghosts and stuff, and she has a business doing it. And because I know her personally, I know she's not trying to scam people. It's just so not her. She's such a nice, it's just no way she would do that. So I think she definitely, so I know there are definitely people out there who believe they can do these magical things.
Like the psychics, like psychics and like, it's, you know, magicians at least have a mechanical kind of, a lot of the time there's a mechanical aspect to what they do, but like the clairvoyants and psychics, they actually think that they're,
well, you know, some of Bo speaks to bears, so I mean, anything's possible.
So here's the deal. I use Yahoo Finance. I use it to make money because it works, not just because they're a sponsor of the show. Heck, I've been using them for years before they ever called to become a sponsor. I do a lot of investing, and I need to make split-second financial decisions, and that's where Yahoo Finance comes in. I trade stocks, and I trade options, and you can't trade them in a vacuum. You gotta know what's going on. Yahoo Finance gives you the opportunity to look at the whole picture. I mean, breaking news, editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts. I love the customizable charts. They have it all. At Yahoo Finance, I'm part of a community of over 90 million users. You heard me. 90 million folks use Yahoo Finance because they're helping you on your way to financial success. Visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination. That's yahoofinance.com, yahoofinance.com.
You know, speaking about all things magic, you sent over an interesting story about a magician.
So last night this happened, and I thought about you guys this morning, because obviously we're on the theme of hacking, and obviously my journalism stuff leads me to, I think, more of a mental hacking, and as you spoke about belief and falling for certain things, and I guess in that domain, and maybe in all of our domain, there's no more interesting person than Derren Brown. The way he gets into people's minds, the way he does these hypnosis things, he got people up on stages and all this stuff. So I went to see him last night, and he's a fan of my exorcism film. I'm very proud of that, and I know that through a friend that he's watched it and seen it. But he got me up on stage last night in front of thousands of people, because he did one of those things where he says, like, put your hand up if you're this, if you want, put your hand up if you are excited or a risk taker, if you've got a partner, and all this stuff. So my partner was with me, and then he said, keep your hands up if your partner wants to come on stage or something. And my girlfriend was just going like, go on. So I said, okay, I'll do this. So then he does this thing where he throws out frisbees into the audience, four different frisbees, and he says, whoever catches it, get it to the nearest person who still has their hand up. And I was one of them. So I go walking to the, and I can't, I have to be careful about how much I reveal, because I actually think I know how Derren Brown did this trick, and he's very clear when he says, please don't tell anyone about what happens on the show. I think he won't mind me telling him this particular trick.
But does he know who you are when you come up? Does he know you made the movie that he liked?
No, I don't think he recognized me, no. And I was so tempted to say it. Do you know what I mean? I wanted him to be like, oh, it's you from the, and everybody listens to his podcast now. Please download.
Yeah.
But he didn't. It would have been fantastic though. I was thinking, how can I get this into a sentence when he's like got me up on the stage?
You could have done like a quick rate and review.
That's right.
Oh, would have been so good. But yeah, he got me and my girlfriend up together, and he did this thing of, you know, there were four different couples, I should say, and he managed to sort of work out which couple was which, because we went up on different sides of the stage. So he was like, okay, you two, you know, he knew which of us were couples, who my girlfriend was, and all of that straight away. He was able to guess certain things about each person, and then he sent them on their way. And then it was left with just me and my girlfriend on the stage. And he suddenly just said, he said, like, is there any embarrassing stories or anything related to you guys, anything? And we were just sort of quiet. And then he said, I'm seeing something about nose picking. right? The audience start laughing then. And I've got, you know, that feeling you're up on a stage, you know, it could just be like you're at a wedding doing a speech or whatever it is, that feeling, your legs are turning to jelly and there's like lights on you. And I was like, oh my God, oh my God. And he's like, yeah, nose picking. We're both shaking our heads. And he's going, yeah, something to do with a mum and nose picking. Someone's mum saw someone nose picking or something like that. And I know that I, what he's getting at, because there's a story that's so embarrassing. And it's one of these stories that I don't mind telling it myself because I'm sort of owning it. But when it's a magician who's looked into my head, supposedly, because that's the trick, to find that out, it's very embarrassing in front of a huge audience, you know? So the story is just that when I was in Argentina, my girlfriend's Argentinian, and when I was out there, I was just sort of sitting on her bed or something. The bedroom door was open. My girlfriend was like off in a, I don't know where she was at the time. And I was just having a little nose pick, you know, you're just clearing it out sort of thing. And
it needs and to it's be done sometimes.
Perfectly acceptable in private.
It is exact word. If you think if you're in private, that's the thing. And I looked up after a while and I saw that my girlfriend's mother was in the doorway and she looked like she'd been settled there for quite some time. And I had my finger right up and I was, it was just the most embarrassing thing.
Now, were you, how many, were you like past the, you were to the second knuckle, I'm guessing?
I think it was like fist deep.
Oh, no.
I was like fist that, perhaps? Is that?
Two hands, yeah. Other people's hands, everything was just as far as you can get.
Yourself in the back of the head to get it to come down.
I was just, yeah, exactly. I was all over the place, fingers in my mouth. Just everything was everywhere. It was, it wasn't a position, especially
well,
because.
Well, you are Andrew Gold, so therefore digging for gold.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, well,
exercising the demons in your nose.
Yeah. I hope that's the only time you've ever heard that, Andrew. Go on.
That was the first time. That unfortunately, her mother doesn't speak English, so I wouldn't have been able to do the gold, you know, in oro, which, well, I suppose you could dig for oro in Spanish. But I mean, it was so embarrassing. And also because I had sort of cultivated, I think, maybe not entirely on purpose, but a bit of a British suave character over the years, because, you know, I wouldn't always speak as much as I do now. Right now, I'm quite erratic and eccentric in English, whereas in Spanish, I'm very fluent, but I'm also a little bit more like, hey, I'm this cool English guy. And that was just gone in that second. Any cool suaveness I had was gone, and that was the end of it. And yes, so Derren Brown revealed it all, and that was a case of, I suppose, hacking into my mind, although I do think I know how he did it, but I can't say because it wouldn't be right.
But if when you talk about that, social engineering. I mean, what we see every day in terms of people getting other people to do things, it's about somebody getting into your head and getting you to do stuff you wouldn't ordinarily do, or getting you to do something impulsive.
Magicians are hackers, let's face it.
Yeah.
So like what was the hack? So what happened? He knows this weird story, which is pretty detailed. How does he know this weird story? Did you write about it and he did recognize you?
No, my mind was going around there. It does ruin the trick. That's why I can't reveal it, because I think it is simpler than you'd like to think. It reminds me of the phone hacking stuff that happened in the UK. I'll get onto that in a second. Just in the same way that it's disappointing when you learn how it happens, because you want to imagine that hacking, when you don't know anything about hacking, which someone like me doesn't, you guys do, but you imagine that it is always this kind of ethereal, esoteric, like almost alien thing you're doing that's like green stuff on a screen with the Matrix and whatever. And sometimes I guess it is just these silly scams. You're just like saying to someone, can you give me some money? And they're going, yeah. And then sometimes, like in the UK, we had this huge hacking scandal. When I was working at the Sun newspaper, the News of the World newspaper, there had this big hacking thing where they were calling celebrities, mostly celebrities, inboxes, and just typing 1234 as the password, or 0000. And it worked. And so they listened to their messages and they published them. And that was all sort of fun and games to an extent. I mean, it wasn't very nice of them to do that. But the worst thing was that they actually hacked into the voicemail of a girl, or I think a teenage girl she was, called Millie Dowler, who was reported missing. So it was this big story about a missing girl. And they hacked into her voice message to find out if they could get like the inside scoop on what happened to her. But because of that, it gave the parents and the police hope that she was still alive, because it seemed like she was accessing her voice messages, and it sent the police in a different direction. And actually she had unfortunately been killed, and it was just horrific. And it was just, you know, awful. But they were doing it all the time, that kind of hacking. But I remember when I found out about it, I was like, is that all they did? It was just typing 0000 or 1234. And similarly with Derren Brown and other magicians, Derren Brown's a genius. The stuff he does is incredible. But some of it is mind control stuff, and some of it is, like any magician, sort of look the other way, get somebody to write a certain thing down with someone else, find a way to get that into, it's that kind of thing. So again, I don't want to sort of show how the sausage is made too much there, because it's not fair on him, but yeah.
How much of that do you think is putting the person on the spot without necessarily giving away the trick? I mean, if you're on a stage in front of several thousand people, I would imagine that that's also sort of creating a very specific environment to be able to get more information out of you.
Yeah, well, you do feel, when you go up, you feel really susceptible. You want it to work more than anything, right? Mm-hmm. You want him to be successful in what he does. And if he isn't, then you feel like it's your fault, you know?
So so stop there, because you've got a nose. I've got a nose. Everyone on this podcast has a nose, and we all have fingers, and we all knew that it was funny that you got caught picking your nose, and we've all been caught picking our noses. So the fact is, we all probably, almost certainly, had mothers. And so a mother seeing some nose picking is almost 100% for sure going to be a story that we all have in common.
But
is it that simple?
But someone else's mother catching you picking your nose is
that too is going to happen with partners, because you know, like it or not, some, you know, your mileage may vary. We have to spend time with our mothers-in-law, and so
it's even more like, it's just about like, I can't go into it because it will just give it away, and it's, you don't really want to know. And
No.
And he specifically says as well, he's like, you know, if you're reviewing this, if you're talking about it, please don't just talk about what happened. I've already done so, but I sort of feel like I've entered into a pact whereby he, without really telling me he was going to do it, has gotten me up on a stage, as you were saying, Travis, and put me in a position where he has revealed to thousands of people something very embarrassing to me. And I think, okay, I can take that with humor, you know, and I've got to own it and tell the story myself. And, you know, but some people wouldn't like that. So I feel like I've given that up. So even though he's asked people not to say what happened, I feel like, okay, I have a right. I contributed to his show. I can say a little bit, but I think giving away exactly what I think I saw happen would be crossing that boundary, and I'll never be able to get it on my podcast.
Can I ask you one question about what happened, and then we'll never speak of it again?
We shall never speak of this again.
So my question is this. When you say what happened, do you mean the subtle shift during a date where you're like, we're totally going to kiss? Or do you mean something mechanical?
Mechanical. Yeah, I mean, because magic doesn't exist, right? And he can do amazing things with suggestion. And his shows have shown he can get people to jump off of buildings. He can get people when they think they're going to die, you know, and there's actually a security thing. He can get people to memorize things in extraordinary ways. He's got incredible talents. He can, you know, guess things about people. But some, and I'm not talking about Derren, I'm talking about all these mentalists in general, sometimes they are using sleight of hands and they are suggesting that things are deeper than they are. They are saying like, you moved in a certain way, that showed me you were nervous and blah, 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 when actually there was another way that they realized, which was maybe not as exciting and a bit more boring and, you know, behind the scenes kind of thing.
There is a similarity between what a investigative reporter does and what a magician does if they know the story they're after. So if you know you're going after a certain kind of criminal, like I've been trying to get, I all morning have been corresponding with a scammer online selling a tractor. I know it's fake. I just want to hear how the scam goes.
Bo's going to write a book about great tractor scams that I have experienced.
There's thousands and thousands. But this person, you know, this one's pretty simple. They're just trying to steal money through eBay. But the, you know, I'll take it through. Now, as a reporter, do you do that kind of work? And do you see how it is sort of similar to what scammers do?
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, look, it's about what you guys do and what I do. I suppose it's about empathy, and I don't mean that kind of empathy that's ideological and, oh, I feel sad for people and all that kind of thing. It's I mean, the putting yourself into the position of the other person. I watched Darren when he came up and I'm thinking the whole time, what would it be like to be him? What is he enjoying? And I do feel that maybe if you're not thinking in that journalistic way, you're just enjoying the show, you're able to enjoy it a bit more. Not to say, I mean, most people are looking, how did he do that? You know, that kind of thing. But I'm thinking, what joy is this giving him? He's got a very showmanship kind of way of speaking and being. And I've heard him interviewed and talk about his teenage years and things like that. When, it, you know, it gave him this presence. It enabled him to impress people around him. And so I guess I'm trying to empathize with him on that level first before thinking about what he's doing. And maybe that might give me an idea of what he might aim to do, what his motivations might be. And look, his motivation is entertainment, and sometimes it is getting a laugh at the expense of some of the people. I mean, that's what most of the show is. He gets people up and hypnotizes them and gets them to do silly things, but they enjoy it. So I'm not saying it in a bad way. They enjoy it, and it's an amazing experience you've had afterwards. But yeah, I think you're right. It is. You know, do you find that as well? I mean, that's what you do, isn't it? You're finding out about hackers. You've got to think about getting to their heads, right?
Well, what I do is, I think you kind of said that you did it as well. I tend to ask questions I know the answer to, and I ask it in a really, really naive way. And I do it on purpose because I want them to explain it to me. And I'm what I'm listening for is mistakes they make in explaining this thing. You know, they have the hacker handbook in front of them. They're like, okay, once he says this, say this, and then do this, and then you do this, and then do this, and then send this, and then you get your malware on their computer, and then you open their bank account and steal their money. Okay, got it? Got it. So I ask questions, and if he or she, I always think it's like some grubby he guy, but anyway, makes a mistake because they're not so experienced. Maybe they haven't been doing it for that long. It's just, I want to see where you can see. When you can see through the veil and how good people are at doing it. Because I've had the experience with some of these scammers that even though you know, just around the corner is the bolt that's going to kill you and put you into the slaughterhouse.
Yeah.
You keep walking because they're very good at getting you to keep going. And I think some of these scammers are, you know, kind of, if they were real mentalists, they wouldn't have to do it for these scams for a living. They could do magic shows. But, you know, they're a form of mentalist.
Yeah, yeah.
I think one of the main things that a scammer has at their disposal or in their toolbox is the ability to create panic. And I think that's one of their primary weapons there, whereas if they were to call and say, there's something wrong with this account, or they make you think that you have malware and you need to install something in order to be able to fix it and so on. That kind of that initial sense of that jolt that they get with their victims is the thing that actually gets them to be able to open them up and make them do what they want them to do. And that's one of the things I was talking about with a mentalist. If you're up on stage, you're probably going to be answering a question or things like that just because you're like, okay, there are thousands of people looking at me. And it sounds like a similar phenomenon with a scammer of just sort of saying, there's a problem with your account or you're being audited or what have you, that when you kind of get into that, then you're not thinking as rationally and you're going to respond in ways that you wouldn't otherwise.
Well, Travis, you know, the other thing about that, it's not just panic. It's also wishful thinking.
Right.
And the magician, the mentalist, they're also operating very much on wish fulfillment, or like, here's what, you know, or even like getting up on stage and being persuaded or hypnotized into doing something funny. I would love permission to, you know, to just strip down to my boxers and dance around like a clown.
Do that every week?
I thought you'd never ask.
Yeah. Right.
Anyway,
there's an element of having to relinquish your ego with, and I think you need to be able to do that to do this kind of work. I think some people wouldn't be able to, particularly if they're on camera or particularly if they're talking to other people they see as like intellectual adversaries, they wouldn't be able to do that. Whereas I guess we have to be happy to do this. So when I spoke to that exorcist, I had to pretend I was the idiot and I was this stupid guy And I think it helps speaking the foreign languages as well, because they sort of trust me, because they don't imagine I'm this clever, well, not that I am clever, but I just mean they don't imagine that I have an ulterior motive, that I'm being sneaky. They just, if you speak to someone who's got an accent, who's a bit like, you know, speaking in broken, I'm how I must sound to them, must be like, hello, what is your, you know, they're not thinking I've got this ulterior motive. And I play on that faux naive mask as much as possible. And a lot of the time it's a case of just letting them talk. And I guess you're just letting them play out as hackers. I'm letting the exorcist just talk and talk and show me, and I'm going, wow, and I'm being impressed, and I'm being the idiot, and I'm playing up his ego. And gradually I started to find out that he was taking advantage of young women that he had abducted from schizophrenia wards, psychiatric wards, who had schizophrenia. And I don't think I'd have gotten to that. I think he would have closed up straight away if I'd come in just like all guns blazing and gone like, what are you doing? This isn't right. So it was this gradual...
Yeah, well, that is very different from the hackers, because on the hacking side of thing, I just got another email from the person selling the tractor, and it just said, you know, no, you cannot see it. No, you cannot try it. But here, send me your banking information. So they are like the person who is like, yes, yes, tell me more about yourself, but really, let's just start making out on the first date. And you're... And you're like, no, I don't, I'm not that easy. But the scammer hacker, if they have a financial motivation and it's not a state sponsored hacker who's trying to get trade secrets or whatnot, they're usually really impatient. And if they sense that you're being too careful or you're not an idiot, they move on.
I suppose in that sense, you could almost, I think if we are comparing journalists to hacker exposers of hacks and the hackers themselves, I think we could be on both sides, because those hackers would do better by just being a bit, if they come on too strong on you, you're going to be scared and go away. And sometimes if they just like very casually go in and they act like they're a bit stupid, they're not sure, oh, you don't want it? Okay. You might give them something.
Well, that was interesting to hear how reporters are basically hackers. I never really thought of it that way.
Mind hackers, yeah.
Yeah, with hackers and scammers, one of the main things that they're trying to get you to do is provide them with information.
But they're not as suave as that magician. I mean, so as I mentioned, I've been trying to get hacked by this tractor salesperson the whole time that we were on. I would mute and send another note. And the hacker's name is supposedly Martha Williams. And Martha's grandfather died and has a tractor that, if I had to guess, I would say is worth about $25,000. But she's selling it for $1,200.
Oh, what a bargain.
Yeah, well, it's for somebody who doesn't want to sell it, you know, to make money. They just want to use it. She just thinks that would be nice for her grandpa. The only problem is this tractor, which was listed in my neighborhood, is now... in Montana.
Oh, that's because they're filming the next season of Yellowstone and they needed the tractor to clear away some of the land.
Oh, I didn't know that. That makes sense though. So I said, you know, for $1,200, which is the list price, I am more than happy to fly out to Montana and look at the tractor and try it. I'm still going to be ahead by about $20,000 when I do that. And she won't get back to me because obviously that is the lie that they're trying to get around. And so the scam here is that you have to go to eBay to do the transaction and then they make money off of that transaction. And the thing that we always forget is while we're looking at like some huge crime, like, oh my God, in reality, the hacker usually has their pinky to the corner of their mouth and they're asking for $30.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And this proves a point. You know, the point we were talking about with Andrew today is that a lot of hacks and scams aren't really complicated. They're pretty simple. And we don't want to believe things that are simple. We want to believe they're harder and more complicated than they really are.
So which brings us to Darren Brown. What do you think, Adam?
This is a perfect example of why Darren Brown doesn't want people to give away the secrets of what his tricks are.
Yep.
Because... every night, he probably does many of the same tricks. And if you go several nights in a row, after a while, you'll start to get into the flow and you start to notice things that perhaps you didn't see the first time out, or you were misdirected the first time.
Or you'll see it right away, Adam, because it'll be the same card, the same story, the same this, same that.
That's right.
What the Heck with Adam Levin is a production of Loud Tree Media.
It's produced by Andrew Stephen, the man with two first names.
You can find us online at loudtreemedia.com and on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Adam K. Levin.